This season, Toyota Racing is looking for jugglers.
Aha!
Not the ones who toss balls or rings. Fans that can juggle the rigors of a 10-month-long season across many different racing circuits.
Well, what if I added knives?
What if you added GR Cup, Formula Drift, and off-road racing? If you can juggle it all, then we want you. Be part of the action at toyota.com/racing. Toyota, let's go places. Formula Drift is a registered trademark of Formula Drifts Holdings, LLC.
Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Underage sale prohibited. Introducing Zone Nicotine Pouches, the perfect balance of unparalleled comfort, longer-lasting flavor, and nicotine that satisfies. Whether you're zoning in during the race or zoning out after a tough day at work, Zone gets you there faster and keeps you there longer. Available in 7 flavors and in 6 and 9 milligram strengths. Find Zone at zonepouches.com and retailers near you. Own your Zone with Zone Nicotine Pouches.
The following is a production of the Motor Racing Network, the voice of NASCAR. The Motor Racing Network presents NASCAR Live.
White flag is in the air. It is still on. William Byron, Chase Elliott, and Kyle Larson.
Off turn two, Byron able to pull away as the battle is on for second. Into four for the final time. It's William Byron.
Up off of turn number four. Checkered flag is waving. William Byron picks up his third win of the season. Byron wins the Cookout 400 at Martinsville Speedway.
How special is this for you to be able to deliver this win to everybody at Hendrick Motorsports?
Yeah, it's awesome. It's way bigger than me. There's so many people, so many men and women that this is a tribute to. Just all the hard work in the shop and just a really good environment to work in. And, you know, they've built something so special over the years, and just thankful to be a part of it. Drive the 24 car is pretty special.
NASCAR Live is brought to you by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. From the MRN studios in Concord, North Carolina, here is your host, Mike Bagley.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of NASCAR Live here on the Motor Racing Network. Mike Bagley and the entire MRN crew here with you as we have cleared a Martinsville weekend that saw Hendrick Motorsports for the first time ever get a 1-2-3 finish at the paperclip, winning as that 40th anniversary of Hendrick Motorsports continues here in 2024. We'll relive the banner day for Hendrick and also William Byron Sunday as he got win number 3 of the season. Ryan Blaney was 5th Sunday in the Cookout 400 at Martinsville. Our Kim Kuhn will sit down with Ryan as we navigate the early reaches of this season. We'll also preview Episode 8 of NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History. We're winding our way to conclusion on our podcast series, and if you've not checked it out, do so at MRN.com or wherever you download your podcasts. Ahead of the Masters this weekend, we'll hear from NASCAR's biggest golfers, and we'll dive into the history of Texas World Speedway, that 2-mile racetrack that punctuated the NASCAR landscape decades ago. We'll take a trip through history and memory lane and a whole lot more. But first, Kyle Ricci is here to get us started with a check of the latest headlines in NASCAR. Kyle, what do you have for us tonight?
Mike, NASCAR makes its way to the Texas Motor Speedway this weekend, and numerous drivers will make their return to the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series. Headlining that group is Kyle Busch, who is back competing for Spire Motorsports, while 2016 Series champion Johnny Sauter will drive for Nice Motorsports. Other notable entries include 2022 Series champion Zane Smith, along with Chris Wright, who will make his season debut for Tricon Garage. On the NASCAR Xfinity Series side, truck regulars Daniel Dye, Taylor Gray, and Corey Heim will compete on the 1.5-mile oval this weekend. Dye for Colleague Racing, Taylor Gray for Joe Gibbs Racing, and Heim for Sam Hunt Racing, while Ryan Truex will make his third start of the year for JGR. And Dale Earnhardt Jr. will be back behind the wheel of a race car this weekend. The NASCAR Hall of Famer will compete in the Cars Tour Late Model Series race at the New River All-American Speedway this Saturday, April 13th. Mike?
Thank you, Kyle. Coming up, we'll have a NASCAR Live Backtracks highlighting this past Sunday's Cookout 400 at Martinsville.
Kyle Larson brings his Chevy in four tires, Sunoco Racing Fuel.
From fueling NASCAR champions on the track for over 20 years to innovating 94 octane, the highest octane on the market, performance is what Sunoco does. All Sunoco fuel at the pump meets the same top-tier standards as the fuel used in NASCAR.
Money stop here for Ryan Blaney. Four tires with Sunoco fuel.
From the track to your tank, you can trust Sunoco to help your vehicle perform at its peak.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. There was extra pressure over the weekend for all of Hendrick Motorsports teams heading into the Cookout 400. Over 1,500 current and former Hendrick employees were in attendance as the team and the organization celebrated their 40th anniversary. All four cars also sported a special ruby red paint scheme in honor of that anniversary. And to say the team lived up to the occasion would definitely be an understatement. Let's relive all the action with a NASCAR Live backtrack to the Cookout 400.
Buckle up. It is time to go here. The Martinsville Speedway, the Cookout 400, the NASCAR Cup Series.
Time to go in Martinsville. Got a beautiful day here. The good Lord has blessed us with such an awesome day to commemorate the 40 years of Hendrick Motorsports. Everything that Mr. and Mrs. Hendrick have done for us, we're truly grateful. Great to have all the Hendrick employees and your families up in the Turn 2 grandstands and up there in our hospitality tent. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for everything you do for us. Big thanks to HendrickCars.com, Hendrick Automotive Group, Chevrolet, and all the great men and women of Hendrick Motorsports for all you do for us. Hope to make you proud today. 400 laps at Martinsville. It's a tough day, but we're ready. Let's go be there at the end. Let's have some fun.
Off turn number four, looking at the starter stand, waiting for the green flag. It is in the air, and we are underway. Kyle Larson will lead the field back to turn number one. Bubba Wallace, though, will work out to his outside.
Here comes Bubba closing in on the back bumper of the Kyle Larson machine. Larson looked high on the Zane Smith automobile. He'll do it again in turn three.
Off turn number four, bottom lane wide open. Bubba Wallace is sticking a look to the inside. Nothing there. Larson hangs on to the top spot. We work the final lap of stage number one.
One more here. One more. Number six.
Larson drifts high in turn one again, trying to make his way around the lap car. Here comes Bubba to the bottom. Bubba's got a wheel in on the inside. Larson, though, gets the drive. Into turn three. The door is open. Here comes Bubba Wallace.
Trying to look inside quarter. Inside quarter. Clear, clear, clear. Backstage checker.
Green and white checkered flag is in the air. Stage one done. Who's going to get there first? It will be Kyle Larson as Bubba Wallace slowed dramatically coming off of turn number four. He got a wheel inside and then just bailed out of the throttle.
Pretty good. Stayed, just kind of lost overall grip and needed some like lateral, but nothing crazy.
And Kyle Larson picks up the stage win, his fourth of the season. Bubba has been second all day long. He may not be there for very long. He slides up the racetrack. Denny Hamlin down to the inside. This is the battle for second going on right behind Joey Logano.
On your side, 11th there. 11th there on your back five.
Hamlin down low. We'll look to slide through at the exit of turn number two. Bubba Wallace hangs with him right there on the outside lane. There's room behind Hamlin if Bubba wants to duck in, but he's going to continue the fight, at least for now.
There is that car length between the Hamlin back bumper and the next car in line in Kyle Larson. It looks like Denny Hamlin will, in fact, clear the Bubba Wallace car, who still opts to ride the outside.
Still out there. Just Bubba. Just Bubba. One in your mirror, both lanes. Just Bubba.
Bubba goes to the outside lane, then crosses over to the bottom, trying to regain that second spot from Denny Hamlin. Didn't work as they hit turn three.
16 to go. Now Denny goes up the racetrack. Bubba gets a look, but he is not going to challenge, at least not on this lap. Bumper to bumper, Hamlin to the outside, all the way back to the top 10 now here at Martinsville. Logano's got the lead on lap 168. Question is, will he have the lead when he comes back around?
You and him, two in your mirror, just you and him.
Denny Hamlin moves him up the racetrack at the entrance to turn number one, and they're going to go side by side for the lead. Hamlin on the inside, Logano on the outside, and still Joey by a bumper.
On, inside Denny. Inside Denny, 12 more here, 12. Still there, one to Bubba. Coming to 11 to go, still there. Quarter, still there. You see him half to Bubba.
Off turn number four as they exit and come to the start-finish line. A virtual dead heat at the line. They're going to say Logano led that lap by 1/1000th of a second.
11 to go. Coming to 10. Your gap's 1 3/4.
There's lap traffic in the neighborhood. The Austin Dillon machine still about 3 car lengths ahead. Hamlin trying to finish off Logano, but now Joey's getting a handful of that outside lane.
Still up there. Still there. Clear.
Off turn 4. Here they come again. They're going to straighten them out. We begin the final lap of stage number 2. The race leader is Denny Hamlin.
Joey Logano drives it deep into turn number 1. Trying to get the advantage over Bowman. He comes off turn 2. May have room to slide down. No. Bowman puts his foot back in the door.
Coming to the green checkered. You're all clear right here. Nice work.
And further up now, coming off turn number 4. The green and white checkered flag is in the air, and Denny Hamlin will win stage number 2. His second stage win of the season. A 5-time winner here at the Martinsville Speedway.
I feel pretty good about it. I just need to be a little tighter on the exit. My only complaint.
Denny Hamlin and Chase Elliott at the front of the field on lap 2:57. Chase Elliott on the outside. Denny battles back on the inside.
Just a spectacular battle for the number 1 spot here in Martinsville Speedway. Hamlin down low. Elliott up high. Now the lap traffic begins to loom large out of 4.
And that's John Hunter Nemechek right in front of the race leader as they will finally settle down. Denny Hamlin will get away with a race lead. Chase Elliott will fall in line and ride second.
Your race of the 9. Leaders of 99, 19 in second, your third. They both still have to pit. They're half a straightaway ahead of you. So just being smart, maintaining the gap to the 9, one at a time through this mess of traffic.
Suarez is the leader in traffic, but here comes William Byron.
99 is the leader. Old tires, he got shoved to the top.
Byron charging off turn number 2 out of that heavy pack of traffic. He'll dive down to the inside of the racetrack, looking to move underneath Suarez. He'll follow Kyle Busch through in the low lane.
We are working lap 3:26, and at the line, Suarez will lead, but he'll lead it by inches, and he'll give it up as he makes his way back to 1.
Door, corner, clear. 9's within 2. Get back to your marks and rhythm. Total focus.
William Byron powers underneath Daniel Suarez. He'll take control of the lead as they race down the backstretch. Hot in his tire tracks now. His Hendrick Motorsports teammate, Chase Elliott. William Byron all by himself. Open asphalt on the back straightaway.
All you.
A half a dozen lap cars between himself. Oh, a bit of the wall goes Nemechek. John Hunter Nemechek blew the right front tire. He's in the fence in turn number 3.
Cross it down. 1 hit the fence. 42 hit the fence. 3 and 4.
Broke a rotor. Right front rotor. It's gone.
And that sound you just heard was William Byron's head beating against the steering wheel.
Well, it'll be a green-white checker. Blizzard or quarter pounder. That's where I'm at. My gut is most are going to stay. I mean, you obviously get a split, but my gut is most are going to stay.
Staying out.
We stay, the 9 stay, the 5, 12. The only one to pit's the 11. You keep everything good, cool.
Here they come through turn number 4. They can't get on the gas until they get to the Geico restart zone.
Just think about all the things you've learned watching him race, what he's going to do. Anticipate it. Line up your lunch.
Which is now. They're going to wait till late in the zone. Green flag is in the air. Chase Elliott gets a great start on the outside lane. Side by side for the race lead at Martinsville.
Here they come off turn number 2. Absolutely dead even. William Byron on the outside. He gets the pole. He goes to the lead. Chase Elliott to second. He bumps him going into turn 3. Tries to move him up the racetrack.
Inside line is open. White
trouble turn 4. Austin Cindric is around. Cars bounce off and keep going.
White flag is in the air. It is still on. William Byron, Chase Elliott, and Kyle Larson.
Off turn 2, Byron able to pull away as the battle is on for second. Into 4 for the final time. It's William Byron.
Up off of turn number 4. Checkered flag is waving. William Byron picks up his 3rd win of the season.
Oh, yeah, boy. Hell yeah.
Woo! I told you all after yesterday. Hell yeah. Great job, boys. Great pit stop. Hell of a team. Great job. Hell yes.
Byron wins the Cookout 400 at Martinsville Speedway.
Man, that was freaking tough, man, at the end. Oh, great job, boys. 40th anniversary.
Coming up, Ryan Blaney stops by.
Hey, everyone, it's Kyle Busch. At Cheddar's, you get a variety of American classics in a place that feels like home. They have comfort food like hand-breaded chicken tenders, homemade chicken pot pie with nearly a half a pound of roasted chicken under that golden flaky crust, slow-smoked baby back ribs so big they're falling off the plate, all for unbeatable prices. And the best part, a free honey butter croissant for every guest. Now that's how they do it. Cheddar's, get a lot for not a lot.
This is NASCAR Live. Now back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. The start of the 2024 season for Ryan Blaney has been an interesting one. The 2023 champ came up just short of winning at Atlanta. But other than that, it's been his consistency. That's what has him tied for fourth in the point standings. Kim Kuhn caught up with the champ to get a status report on his 12-team and gauge his confidence heading into one of his best racetracks this weekend at the Texas Motor Speedway.
The 12 team has separated themselves from the rest of the Fords. As of last week, you're the only Ford in the top 10 in points. What about your team do you feel like has made you guys run so well and hasn't hindered your team like maybe some of the other Fords?
I think we've just put together a fairly decent start to the year. I think the last couple of weeks have kind of been a little bit sloppier than, you know, the first month or so. But you're going to have those weeks that, you know, some things just kind of are off for you. But No, I just think we've tried to learn this car the best we can. I mean, all the Ford teams are trying to do that, trying to learn this new Mustang the best we can, and we've just been able to apply it and execute good races, you know. So hopefully we can continue to do that, just continue to get better on the track and also, you know, just have good races and execute well and try to bring home good finishes. So need to find a little bit more speed to kind of compete for the win side of it, but hopefully we're closing in on that.
On that note, there does seem to be this adjustment period to the new Ford body. At what point does everybody need to be caught up? Like, when do people need to press the panic button?
I'd like to be, like, caught up right now, you know, kind of where we want to be right now, but I try not to press the panic button on that side because it is a long year, you know, and you have a lot of things to learn, and I feel like what we learned from last year, kind of the summer months going into the playoffs, like we've tried to bring that same mentality of, hey, things might not be going how we want to right now, but we're going to continue to try to learn and get better, and there's still time to get better. So, I mean, we get into the late summer and you're still struggling, then yeah, okay, you need to figure something out quickly, but right now there's still plenty of time. So you just obviously want to be running a little bit better, but it's definitely not close to the panic button.
The Cup Series has only visited one traditional mile and a half so far this season. What did you learn about the Ford Mustang Dark Horse at Vegas that might help you at Texas?
Yeah, I thought we strung together a good run at Vegas. You know, ended up third, and while we weren't kind of race-winning speed like the 5 and the 45 had, I still think there's some things we took away from that race that we can apply to Texas, hopefully. So we'll see. I mean, you know, you get about a month in between that race, right, to kind of figure out, okay, where were we at? Where can we improve? And, all right, now let's apply it a month later. Did we improve? Did we not? If we didn't, back to the drawing board. If we did, great. Let's try to work down that path. So it's just kind of a step-by-step process. But, yeah, you hope the time you had kind of in between Vegas and Texas, you learned some things and you can apply them and be a little better.
The Cup Series heads back to Talladega in a couple of weeks. In terms of the fuel-saving strategies we're seeing now at Super Speedways with the next-gen car, how does that change how you work your way through traffic and how you change, or does it change how you control the race?
Yeah, I mean, I think you talk to anybody, like, I think everybody hates the fuel-saving aspect of it, you know, and I mean, no one wants to watch it. We don't want to do it, but we have to do it because it affects our race, and so we're going to do whatever we can to have our race go the best it can, and that's saving gas before the stop. So it's just one of those weird things right now that is just in the Cup Series and a part of the Speedway racing package. And you know, the less fuel you can take, the more you're going to jump up there. And just because it's hard to kind of get a third lane going is tough. And then the time you gain on a green flag stop, you just kind of jump everybody. So that's been our strategy. I feel like our group kind of figured it out before others, and then we were able to really do well and kind of find ourselves in spots to win those races. So it's nice going back to Talladega. We've been really fortunate there, honestly, my whole career. And it's nice to have won that race in the fall. So hopefully we can just find ourselves in a spot again to win it. That's all you can ask for. But yeah, the fuel save side is, I don't think it's going to be much different. I mean, until you change stages or change fuel cells, I mean, it's, or, you know, fueling systems, it's going to be the same thing. Just part of the game.
3-time Talladega winner. So where do you want to be on the white flag, and has it changed over the years?
Yeah, before I think the simple answer is like just running, you know, but now I feel like it's harder to make your way up from the back to the front. And you haven't seen, just because of kind of the lack of a third lane, you haven't seen like those big wrecks. Like, so as before, you know, you come to five to go, you could be 20th. All right, there might be a big wreck and you can kind of wiggle your way up through there, or you can make a lane work. But now, gosh, you kind of got to be in like the first three rows. You're kind of doing something. You're contributing to that lane. If you're fourth, fifth row on back, you're not really doing anything to that lane. Like, you can shove all you want, but you're just kind of stacking everybody up. So the first three cars kind of do something. So that's really where you want to be. And then just depends on the situation you're in. If you're leading your row, okay, your job has changed from when you're second or third. So you just kind of figure out what spot you're in, and you just hope that you get a chance, you know, on the last lap to kind of poke out there and get a good run at the good time, or block the run that is coming. So first three rows.
The Ryan Blaney Family Foundation always throws an event in May. This year it's a pickleball tournament. Why? And what are your pickleball skills like?
Yeah, I've only played pickleball twice, but I've really enjoyed it when I've played it. We did the Topgolf thing for a couple of years, and that was a blast, and we just kind of wanted to switch it up a little bit. Everyone had a ball at the Topgolf thing. We wanted something to where everyone can play. You know, if you have a true golf outing, not everyone plays golf, so kind of exclude some people. We wanted something to where everyone can come and have fun and participate, and I feel like pickleball is kind of the same way. It's not a tournament. It's just kind of come and knock the ball around a little bit and have fun, and we might have a little tournament at the very end with some folks, but at the end of the day, it's just something where everyone can go have fun, and so just a little change up, but also keeping the same thing of, you know, want everyone to come and have a good time no matter what age you are. You know, if you got a hurt knee or not, you want to be able to come out and have a good time.
Thank you, Kim. Coming up, we'll preview the latest episode of NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History.
Crowd spinning your hand up to stopping, yeah. Not a chair, creaky stair, or even engine repair. Crowd spinning your hand, nothing you can't do. Like the lawn, Mickey John, or that kitchen hat on. Crowd spinning your hand up to stopping, yeah.
From outdoor care to home and auto repair, do it with Craftsman. Find the tools, equipment, and storage you need at your local Lowe's, Ace Hardware, or Craftsman.com.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Yesterday, we dropped the eighth episode of our podcast series highlighting the 2004 NASCAR Nextel Cup Series season. This episode features on the middle portion of the inaugural chase for the Cup, including an underdog victory at Kansas, Jimmy Johnson's domination at Charlotte, and unspeakable tragedy at Martinsville.
Walk in the park for Jimmy Johnson. No one anywhere close to him. He comes to the line and wins the Subway 500, his second win in a row.
Immediately after the checkered flag flew, the tone and the tenor at the racetrack immediately changed. Jimmy Johnson did not celebrate the victory with a burnout, but instead immediately returned to pit road at the request of his crew chief, Chad Knaus. News had begun to trickle out that a plane carrying multiple Hendrick Motorsports employees had crashed near the racetrack. MRN pit reporters Adam Alexander and Winston Kelly both remember the rumors of the crash beginning near the midpoint of the race.
Well, where it's a little bit different on pit road, you know, we started hearing the same thing on pit road, but I was able to validate from some people that what was being talked about was likely true. Now, nobody would say, yeah, this is what it was, but we heard enough of that it was a plane crash, and finally later heard that it was a Hendrick plane, that what they were hearing about, that, you know, I didn't get a final confirmation until after the race. You know, Jimmy won the race, and I'd been told by somebody from NASCAR that they're not going to do any post-race interviews, that they need to take the driver somewhere, and we had heard on the queue, you know, we just need to talk about here's what happened, and until there's an official statement. But it was during the latter half of the race that we were pretty sure on pit road that something tragic had happened, and we felt like from what we were hearing it was a Hendrick plane. We had no idea the magnitude of it, that it was 10 people that were on the plane.
I don't remember the exact stage of the race, somewhere middle portion I would guess, but I was starting to see a lot of activity on pit road from people there on the NASCAR side that I never would normally see on pit road during a race. That made me think something doesn't seem right here. I don't recall what drivers I was covering that day. I don't remember if I had Jimmy or maybe someone else in the Hendrick group. But I do remember noticing this odd activity and odd communication, and with that, the body language of the reactions that said to me something is not right. And so I remember during a commercial break saying, as we would all communicate, you know, off air during commercial to one another, I remember saying to Danielle Fry, as you mentioned, she was one of our pit reporters, but Danielle came to us after doing a long stint at NASCAR, had deep relationships there, was very respected at NASCAR. I remember saying to Danielle, Danielle, at the next commercial, you know, come see me. She said, okay. So she came down and I said, I think something's going on. And I remember her reaction was like, something's wrong with the car. Do you think the engine's going bad? I'm like, no, it's not like that. Like something is up that is not right. And only you could probably go and investigate this. And I remember even saying to her, like, this is not a story for the air. This is just a story to understand what is going on here.
The Hendrick drivers and crew chief had no inclination of what had happened until after the checkered flag flew. Chad Canals remembers thinking that his team was in trouble with the sanctioning body when NASCAR officials instructed him to tell Jimmy to come directly to the garage.
I didn't know until after the conclusion of the race, which was really interesting. And again, we won Martinsville. Kind of a misty day, cold day, rainy, you know, so it was just like a heavy, heavy day. So just hyper in tuned with the team and the driver, you know, what are we going to do if it rains? What are we going to do if it sprinkles? How are we going to maintain track position? How are we going to win this race? And with about, I don't remember how many laps to go, I'm going to say 25 laps to go, a NASCAR official came up, climbed up on top of the truck or on top of my pit box and said, hey, post race, if you guys win this, don't do a burnout. Now, me, I'm sitting there, I'm like, What in the world's going on? You know, and I immediately take it the wrong direction. I immediately think, okay, what's NASCAR trying to do to, you know, make sure we don't hurt our car, take this win away from us? What are they trying to inspect? Like, I took it way the wrong direction. And I didn't, it never hit me. I never knew. I knew something was wrong, but I thought it was more NASCAR coming down on us to take our car from an inspection standpoint or something like, because we just whipped everybody. You know, I do remember in hindsight looking around the pit box and seeing a lot of people around the pit box that with a different expression than what I had thought. So I didn't know at that point something's going on. I just thought I was in trouble because I got in trouble a lot back then. We win the race and, you know, told Jimmy don't do any burnouts. And he came to the pit box, I believe, and he hopped out and he said, what's going on? I'm like, dude, I don't really know what's happening. And then Christine Curley, Ken Howes, and a couple others grabbed us and we walked over to the NASCAR trailer and to the they pulled us up inside and we sat in the little office that they've got up there and they told us about what was going on there inside. So that was pretty tough.
You can catch that full episode of NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Coming up, we'll dive into the history of Texas World Speedway.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Continue on this week's NASCAR Live. This weekend, NASCAR returns to the Lone Star State for the second time in just under a month. We thought that this would make for a perfect time to dig into the history of one of NASCAR's original stops in Texas, the Texas World Speedway. Kurt Becker is here with the story.
Before we had the likes of Texas Motor Speedway and Fort Worth and Circuit of the Americas in Austin, the original Texas track in NASCAR was Texas World Speedway. The two-mile oval opened in 1969 in College Station, Texas, just southeast of the campus of Texas A&M University. The track was originally named Texas International Speedway. The layout was similar to Michigan International Speedway, but with slightly steeper banking. The track was originally owned by American Raceways Incorporated, the same company that owned and operated Riverside International Raceway, Trenton Speedway, and the Atlanta International Raceway. The NASCAR Cup Series first visited the track on December 7, 1969, for the running of the Texas 500. Buddy Baker dominated the event, but a late race crash sent him to the sidelines and cleared the way for Bobby Isaac to win by a margin of more than two laps. After a year off the schedule, NASCAR returned to the Speedway in December of 1971 for the final event of a 48-race season. Bobby Isaac suffered an engine failure shortly after the green flag flew, clearing the way for a new winner at the track. The King, Richard Petty, took the checkered flag and led teammate Buddy Baker across the finish line, making for a 1-2 finish for Petty Enterprises. The next year, Motor Racing Network was on the scene in College Station for the first time, providing live coverage of the 1972 Lone Star 500. As the broadcast began, Ken Squire described what fans might see on a hot summer day in the Lone Star State.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, from College Station, Texas. This is Ken Squire and the Motor Racing Network, ready to bring you the Lone Star 500 Grand National Stock Car Race. The stars of NASCAR participating in this event at College Station, Texas, with the temperatures in the 90s and 44 cars about to do battle on this two-mile banked asphalt speedway. It's going to be an interesting race today for a lot of reasons. The heat, for one thing. Yesterday's consolation race ran only 10 laps under the Texas weather, which has a flawless blue sky, but temperatures very, very high. In that 10-lap race, everybody was talking about how to beat the heat. Frank Warren of Augusta, Georgia, wore sneakers yesterday, and he had those sneakers literally melt to the bottom of the automobile, right onto the firewall. That's how hot it was yesterday, and the question for the crews all morning has been what to do about that heat. There is a breeze, about a 15 to 20 mile per hour breeze today. It'll be gusting from now and then, but the question is, will it do any good? It's a pretty dry wind to be pushed around in this hot, arid area where this Texas World Speedway's race is to be run today.
What fans did see that day was Richard Petty becoming the first two-time winner at the track.
The race fans in this end of the speedway on their feet as Richard Petty moves into turn number three. That red and blue automobile moving around some of the lapped automobiles coming down. If he can get it off turn four, he backs off the pace a little bit. There's some traffic up front. He's not taking a chance. Richard Petty out against the wall, heading for the start-finish line. Ladies and gentlemen, Richard Petty has just won the Lone Star 500 at Texas World Speedway at a speed average of some 143 miles an hour.
What made that particular win unique was that it was Petty's first in a Dodge after having scored 133 victories behind the wheel of a Plymouth. 5 months later, in November, Buddy Baker finally got that elusive Texas win in a photo finish over A.J. Foyt. And in June of 1973, Baker returned to Texas to lead nearly 170 laps before cutting down a tire with 35 circuits to go. As a result, the King went to victory lane at Texas World Speedway yet again.
They're coming around to complete the Texas 500 here at the Texas World Speedway. Richard Petty is coming out of turns numbers three and four. He is looking for another checkered flag in a career that has seen so many of them. Here's Petty coming down to the line, and Richard Petty in the STP Dodge has won the Alamo 500.
Following that race, NASCAR took a six-year extended break from the Texas World Speedway, but the track still hosted numerous events during that time, most notably the second annual Willie Nelson's 4th of July picnic in 1974. The multi-day music festival featured Nelson, Jimmy Buffett, and Waylon Jennings, among others. But on June 3, 1979, NASCAR and Motor Racing Network made their return to College Station, Texas.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, from College Station, Texas. Barney Hall and Jackie Root ready to bring you the broadcast of the Texas 400. And Jackie Root, there's one word for the speedway, and it's hot today.
Barney, that could be a key factor in who wins this race. Of course, you've planked some of the top Winston Cup Grand National drivers on the grid, but we were talking to Bud Moore just last night, and he said the last time these cars came to College Station, Texas, the temperature soared into over 100 degrees, and it dropped a lot of the front runners out just from heat exhaustion. Could be a main story here. Ned Jarrett will be covering the action down on pit road for the MRN Broadcasting Company will be keeping us abreast of just how the drivers are faring in this heat and humidity.
After having finished second to Richard Petty when the series last visited in 1973, Darrell Waltrip proved it was no fluke by winning the Texas 400 in dominating fashion.
As they come down to the line, Waltrip is out front. Allison trying to hold off Buddy Baker, and he will do it. And winning the Texas 400 will be Darrell Waltrip.
By the time the 1980s arrived, Texas World Speedway was in turmoil. American Raceways Incorporated had filed for bankruptcy in the 1970s, and the track was having difficulty maintaining the standards necessary to host a major national series race. USAC pulled its dates from the track after the 1979 season, but NASCAR remained committed a while longer. And in 1980, Cale Yarborough took advantage by winning the NASCAR 400. But in 1981, NASCAR would pay its final visit to College Station, and the race proved to be the most competitive of the eight which took place there. The Budweiser NASCAR 400 had 35 lead changes, a record for the track, and it was only the second time in track history that more than two cars finished on the lead lap. To be specific, there were three, and they were driven by Benny Parsons, Dale Earnhardt, and Bobby Allison.
But Earnhardt tries to make a move. Earnhardt has been leading much of this afternoon, has been going that low gale. Now Benny Parsons is beating him to it, but Earnhardt is coming back. Earnhardt is beginning to close on Benny Parsons.
As they come out of turn number four, Parsons by four car lengths. Earnhardt will take a run at him, but he will not make it, and Benny Parsons will win the Budweiser 400 here at College Station, Texas, by some three car lengths over the Wrangler machine of Dale Earnhardt.
That win for Benny Parsons marked the last time the NASCAR Cup Series would race at the track, and the last time any major series would compete at Texas World Speedway for more than a decade. During that time, the track remained open on a limited basis, but only for amateur racing. But a change of ownership took place in 1991, bringing with it some renovations in hopes of revitalizing the facility. Both ARCA and the NASCAR West Series raced at the track back-to-back years in the 1990s, with Darrell Waltrip returning to sweep both events in March of 1993. But that would prove to be the last time the Oval hosted a major national touring series. The International Motorsports Association raced on the facility's road course twice in the mid-1990s, but as for fully fendered stock cars, Texas World Speedway was relegated to being a site where NASCAR teams would occasionally test to prepare for similar layouts such as Michigan and Fontana. Particularly memorable was Greg Biffle testing there in 2009 and setting what would have been track records in a stock car, reaching a top speed of 218 miles per hour and an average lap speed of 195 miles per hour. But as NASCAR continued to reshape its rules and guidelines for testing, even those happenings became a thing of the past at Texas World Speedway. In 2017, news broke that the entire facility in College Station was being leased to the automotive company Copart, which was using it as a catastrophe storage facility for vehicles that had been damaged in Hurricane Harvey. The next year, demolition on the track began to make room for new development, ending any hopes for the track to be brought back to life. It is left to the imagination how the current generation Cup Series cars would have raced on the high-speed, high-bank 2-mile oval, which was known as Texas World Speedway. But the track itself will be remembered as the original crown jewel of the Lone Star State and a place where names such as Petty, Waltrip, and Foyt once thrived.
Thank you, Kurt. Coming up, some of the sport's best drivers will tell us about one of their biggest hobbies off the track, golf.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. While NASCAR's focus this weekend will be on the Texas Motor Speedway in Fort Worth, the golf world's eyes and ears and attentions will be on Augusta, Georgia, and the Masters. Golf is one of the biggest hobbies of NASCAR drivers off the track, and some have even had the pleasure of playing at Augusta National. Here's Tim Catalfemo.
One of the biggest weeks in golf is underway as the Masters takes place this week at Augusta National Golf Club in Augusta, Georgia. While NASCAR Cup Series drivers' focus will be on getting to victory lane at the Texas Motor Speedway on Sunday, there's sure to be more than a few drivers interested in who will be donning the green jacket inside Butler Cabin that afternoon. Throughout the NASCAR Cup Series garage, there are more than a handful of drivers and crew members who have caught the golf bug over the years. In fact, golf has become so popular amongst Cup Series drivers that they have their own tour, the Golf Guys. The Golf Guys Tour has been described as the most frustrated amateurs on tour. So what is the Golf Guys and how did it start? Denny Hamlin, driver of the number 11 Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing, takes us back to the tour's origins.
Really, the Golf Guys started because me and Ricky Stenhouse were at a Loud New Hampshire test, and we were talking about golf, and there was always a group of guys that were on a text that we actually called the Golf Guys. It was the guys where if we want to go play golf, we text this thread, and any one of the guys that says, yeah, I can play, we'll go play with them that particular day. So we had had the Golf Guys name, but and it really was just made up of a bunch of people in the NASCAR industry that, you know, we used to practice on Saturday, and after Saturday, and we still do now, we've got all afternoon to do whatever we want. And so we usually try to find a golf course, you know, within 20-30 minutes of a drive of the track. And so it was a text thread of those that were in the racing industry that loved golf. And then we had to figure, well, how are we going to create a system where we can find out, like, have points and have finishes, and then you create a champion at the end. So me and Ricky just put our heads together and came up with it.
Hamlin, the 2023 Golf Guys Tour champion, has created healthy rivalries on the track, and those have now extended to the course. One of those budding rivalries has been with his co-founder, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., who he calls the best golfer in the garage.
Ricky Stenhouse, I hate to say it, I had the crown for many years as the driver, but he's, since I started 2311, I haven't had the time to play as much as I need to I can compete with Ricky. We're only a couple shots difference, but he deserves the crown as the best right now.
The golf love goes beyond Cup Series drivers. Michael Jordan, co-owner with Hamlin of 2311 Racing, has long been known to be an obsessive golfer. Jordan's passion for the game has led him to open up his own course in Hobe Sound, Florida, affectionately named The Grove 23. According to Hamlin, on the golf course is where he first pitched the idea of 2311 to Jordan.
And that's actually how I pitched him on the idea of starting a race team. Was I went down to Florida and played golf with him, and then met him. We had to sit down afterwards to, you know, kind of lay out the business plan of how I was going to start it.
Bubba Wallace, the driver of the number 23 at 2311 Racing, has also been involved with the Golf Guys throughout the years, including winning the Tour Championship a few years ago. Despite that championship crown, Wallace has yet to earn the exclusive invite to play with MJ.
No, he won't. He's a golf snob. MJ is a golf snob. Never play with him. Mm-mm. No, he has his group that he wants to play with, and that's it.
While Wallace has yet to get the call to join MJ's pairing, he has garnered a highly coveted tee time at the Grove 23 and has his sights on another famous course.
I've gotten to play at the Grove. A lot of people can say that. I would say do Augusta for just the history behind it. Blaney's played there twice now. He's got the in there. I've yet to get invited to that, and he went with me to the Grove, so what the hell.
2021 NASCAR Cup Series champion Kyle Larson has also taken part in the Golf Guys Tour. Like Wallace, Larson is waiting on the invite to Augusta, but he can already claim an outing at historic Pebble Beach.
Yeah, I would love to play at Augusta just because, like, it's rare for anybody to get to play there. So that would be pretty neat. But yeah, we played Pebble. That was probably one of my most favorite golf trips. We did that in probably 2017 or so. Myself, Michael Waltrip, my manager JP, and our friend Brian Jackson, we went and we played. Went for 3 days. We played 36 holes, 2 days, and then 18 on whatever day that was, Wednesday or something. But we walked every hole. You know, we didn't have a golf cart or anything. So got our steps in, and it was fun. I love walking and playing golf.
With the notoriety of racing in the Cup Series combined with a shared love for golf, a collection of drivers have been given invites to participate in Pro-Ams ahead of PGA and LPGA Tour events. Kyle Larson is one of those drivers, having played at Quail Hollow Club in Charlotte for the Wells Fargo Championship Celebrity Pro-Am.
Ricky, Denny, and I, we did the Pro-Am at the Wells Fargo in Charlotte. We did that with Harold Varner, and that was really fun. I enjoyed it. You know, he's a great guy. And he'll still text me every now and then, you know, when I win a race or have a good run. Like, he's always paying attention, which I think is really cool.
Austin Dillon, another former member of the Golf Guys, has also played in a few pro-ams. According to Dillon, one of his events came at the LPGA Tour.
You know, I got to play in a couple pro-ams. That was a lot of fun. Played with Russell Henley and Vijay Singh. That was cool. I actually have a blast every year. We go to the LPGA tournament in Midland, Michigan. It's called the Dow Great Lakes Invitational. And then we get to play for Dow and play with different LPGA players, and they're super impressive. Got to play with Nelly Korda and Jessica Korda. They ball. That was a fun experience.
While the dream of hosting a championship trophy in Phoenix is on the mind of every Cup Series driver, let us now remember, especially this week, that there are other prizes on the line for the golf-playing few.
Coming up, we'll relive the second-ever trip for the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series at Texas Motor Speedway.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Before we head for the exits, we're dialing up the MRN time machine and going back to June 5th, 1998 and heading back for the second time with the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series to the Texas Motor Speedway.
A three-truck convoy trying to mount a charge on the leaders. They need to make up about a second as they head back to turn number three. Harvick picks up the tail end. Joe Ruttman up front and Stacy Compton, the meet in the middle as they chase the leaders back to start finish.
The leaders being Tony Raines and Andy Houston. Tony Raines feels this track is a payback track. He was running fourth here last year when the motor blew up and then the Pennzoil Dodge. Now he leads and we have six laps remaining. He works off of turn two. 1.5 truck lengths, his advantage headed to turn three.
Blistering pace back to turn number three. Raines brings it again, down low on the apron, drops left side rubber just below the white stripe. Andy Houston still trying to maintain striking distance as they head back to the front straightaway.
Coming off of turn four, now completing lap number 162. It is still Tony Raines, only a truck length in front of Andy Houston. Then it's about 5 truck lengths back to third spot, Joe Ruttman.
Tony Raines swings it into the first corner, glues it down to the bottom. Andy Houston still 2 truck lengths at back. Once again, Kevin Harvick looks to the inside of Compton. Can't get it done for fourth. They're in turn three.
Harvick breaks to the bottom of the racetrack. Tries to pull up alongside Compton. Compton won't have any of that. He'll protect the spot on the racetrack. Stays in a three-truck draft as they chase the leaders.
And a follow-up on Jack Sprague. Remember when he spun at lap 135 through the grass here on the main straightaway? He restarted 17th. He has now rallied his way back up to the sixth spot. As he tries to close in on a good three-way race, Joe Ruttman stays. AC Compton, Kevin Harvick all tied up in their battle as they race down the back straightaway.
Compton breaks out of line for the time being, looks to the inside of Ruttman, now down in turn three. He'll try to squeeze down low, can't do it, gets back in line, chases Ruttman off the corner.
It would appear for the moment nobody has anything for Tony Raines. Crossing the stripe on the front stretch, Andy Houston holding down second, so now the fight will be for third between Joe Ruttman and Stacy Compton.
Stacy Compton looking to the inside of Ruttman, but there's nothing there. Ruttman glued down to the inside of the racetrack, holds the inside lane to his own. Down the back straightaway, they'll head to turn three.
Third through fifth, they're on a mission. They're trying to track down the leaders. They'll stay in line. A three-truck draft off the third corner. They'll try to trace down Andy Houston and Tony Raines back to start finish.
Tony Raines has 2 laps to go to prove that he can be a winner at a track other than I-70 Speedway in Odessa, Missouri. He's closing in on lap traffic. Rob Morgan directly ahead as they race to turn two.
Tony Raines tiptoes up to the top of the banking. Rob Morgan keeps it glued down. Here's Andy Houston. Now he gets a run on Raines down the back straightaway, tightening up the lead battle.
Houston peeks to the inside, tries to get that deep charge down into turn number three. Can't do it this time. Sweeps back up the racetrack and rides the tire tracks of the Pennzoil Ford back to start finish.
If Andy Houston had anything in reserve, now is the time to pull the trigger. Tony Raines takes the white flag at Texas Motor Speedway and leads the pack into turn one.
Nothing left but the checkered flag for Tony Raines as he has more traffic to tiptoe around. Here's Starr to the inside. Raines swings out wide. Andy Houston, 2 truck lengths behind down the back straightaway.
The sand begins to trickle out of the hourglass for Andy Houston. He has a 2 truck length deficit behind the leader. Tony Raines works his way off turn four for the final time and heads back to the checkers.
Off turn four for the second year in a row, Ford will win at Texas. Tony Raines will win the Pronto Auto Parts 400 at the Texas Motor Speedway.
You can listen to that race in its entirety by subscribing to MRN Classics wherever you listen to podcasts. I'd like to thank Ryan Blaney for stopping by this week. I'm Mike Bagley. For the rest of the MRN crew, we'd like to thank you for joining us on the party here as well. Don't forget, NASCAR Live Wide Open has another download coming your way on Thursday, and we'll talk to you on Friday night with the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series at Texas. Until then, so long, everybody.
NASCAR Live is a production of the Motor Racing Network with studios in Concord, North Carolina, and was brought to you by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. Today's broadcast was produced by Trey Downing, Pat Jaggers, and Julian Council. The executive producer for MRN is Ryan Horn. Remember to visit MRN.com for all of the latest news and information. NASCAR Live is produced under an exclusive license with NASCAR. Any use of the accounts and descriptions contained in this broadcast must be with the express written permission of NASCAR and the Motor Racing Network.